He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to Friday morning, everyone. This is the March 5th edition of the Best Stocks Now program. I'm Barry Kite, pointer analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill today as he gets a jump start on the newsletter. Lots of information in there this week and looking forward to it. And as usual, joining us this morning is our bond portfolio manager, busy man at the firm this week, an investment advisor, Paul Carlson. Good morning. How's your week, Paul?
Good morning, Barry. Happy Friday to you.
Yeah, your bonds are back in vogue. They're certainly capturing a lot of headlines as of late.
Yes, they are. I saw the we'll get into it more later, but we had the unemployment figures come out and the little jump in yield on that, but they've settled back a little bit now, so we'll talk more in detail. Yeah,
the good news is, when you have the last couple of weeks that we've had, it's kind of hard to find some good news or look for some good news in the middle of it. But I think the rise in yields, I mean, to me it seems like it should happen, right? I mean, you've got
right.
a lot of momentum from a growth standpoint. We're starting to see some of that around the globe as well, even in Europe.
Yes.
picking up some of their manufacturing numbers and in Germany. And so to me, it's economically it all makes sense. How low we are in terms of rates it doesn't seem much of a concern. Of course, that the jump when you go 100% rate increase from say 75 basis points to 150 basis points, well then that sounds big. If you're just talking about a 75 point jump in the rate, right, that doesn't
a double.
Sound big.
No.
Yeah, but when you double it, it's it's all relative. And I think to a certain extent, the worry about inflation, right? We need reinflation, right? Isn't that part of growth? Now, if we have inflation with no growth, well, that's a problem. But as long as there's growth accompanying some of that inflation, then I think it's not quite as worrisome as we're making it out to be. But
And I saw that even Australia is coming out of their recession recently, so that's good to hear too.
And
is global.
Yeah, and they had an uptick in rates as well. So, I guess the theme of the week is kind of the rotation continues and building all over that and hitting that hard in terms of your higher PE ratio stocks coming out of favor, and then the flow into referring to it as your basic stocks, but kind of your old economy stocks, right? Your
chemicals.
And so of course we didn't get any and you and I kind of touched on this a couple of weeks ago, but Powell's comments kind of fell flat yesterday. We've been kind of preaching that the best the Fed's best monetary policy going forward is going to be rhetoric, right? I mean, you can only do so much in terms of bond buying. I mean, they pretty much opened the floodgates very early on in this crisis. And so, really the best tool going forward is going to be rhetoric. And, in terms of Powell, his Fed speak kind of needs he needs to work on his Fed speak, I think, just a bit. I'm a little bit worried about it from that perspective. If he can take some pointers from Bernanke and Yellen, they were, of course, had to unwind, maybe the QE has been bigger now. I don't know exactly. Hasn't gotten as quite as much press as we had in our QE 1, 2, 3, infinity from the 2010s, right? So it's like, to me, they did a great job of unwinding that. I'm not even sure if they really fully unwound it before this crisis. But to me, I have faith that the Fed can, kind of unwind the whole thing. I just, like I said, I just hope the rhetoric along the way matches kind of their job that they're doing behind the scenes. Because I think, like it or not, and like, call it market manipulation or whatever you want, but you know, overall, I think the Fed's done a great job, you know, ever since essentially, letting Lehman fall. After that, right, they've kind of been doing good, at least scoreboard wise, in my book. But, economy's showing that we are in recovery. We'll get into the job numbers in a bit, but, I don't think the recovery is moving too fast or moving too slow. So to me, it's kind of in that position where it almost really shouldn't fuel inflation fears. And of course, you know, I look back at history and it's kind of comical because, you know, the markets and the Fed's been trying to fuel inflation for, you know, at least 10 years. And we haven't gotten it. Right. And so, just look back at Japan, right? They've been virtually two decades, mm-hmm. right? And they actually had inflation tick. Yeah, and I think me and you hit it, and they had inflation tick down last month by 0.9%. So, it's one of those things that, you know, we're certainly fearful of, but, you know, you kind of want to, I mean, you really want it. You need some inflation in order to fuel growth. So we'll see kind of where that goes. Regardless, we've got to, you know, have a game plan. You know, if the market perceives inflation, well, you know, whether it's true or not, we've still got to protect portfolios against it. And so in the second half, we'll kind of get into, you know, a little bit of the game plan behind the rotation and what Bill and we're doing at the firm to kind of reshape those portfolios going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll discuss that in more depth later.
Yeah.
Did you want me to go over the global markets?
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump in and figure out where we're at in the market, and then we'll kind of go from there and dissect it as we go along.
So over in Asia, the Japanese Nikkei 225 was down 0.25%. We had Hong Kong down 0.5%. Mainland China down just basically unchanged. India down 0.9%. And then over in Europe, we have the London up 0.25%, Paris down 0.5%, and Frankfurt down 0.75%. And then on this side of the pond, we've got the S&P right now up 5 points, 37.72, NASDAQ down 65 at 12,388. The Dow Jones is up 135 at 31,020. We've got the Russell down 6 at 21.39. And, wow, look at this, Barry. Crude oil up $2 at $66 a barrel. That's quite a jump.
Unbelievable. That's part of that supply and demand because we had, you know, OPEC actually surprised and is not going to increase production. That came out, I guess, earlier part of yesterday, I think, or maybe during market open yesterday. But, yeah, with, crude oil above 65, I wouldn't have fathomed it really. Given some of the, I mean, there's a lot of headwinds, right? For
how many jets are still not flying and so forth? You know, it's kind of crazy. Yeah,
it really is. But when you look at it from a
supply
economic
side.
Recovery standpoint, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, we've certainly EVs gotten a lot of. And solar have gotten a lot of attention over the last year, but, you know, still in regards to, you know, what we're using to power, you know, the world for, you know, at least the next 10 years, right?
That's,
you know,
it's still very small on a percentage. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a majority of that's still going to be fossil fuel-based, but certainly in your big generation power, right? I mean, you know, it's one thing to power a combustible engine with whatever, but, you know, there's a lot of, your big power plants, right? They still use a significant amount of fossil fuel,
tankers that are moving those containers across the oceans, you know, just right there.
And it's not just here; it's all around the world, right? I mean, it's
right.
You know, we may have a cleaner version of power, but I mean, you know, you wasn't too long ago you look at Beijing, probably still in terms of, you know, what their, you know, what their atmosphere looks like, and so. We're still using plenty of fossil fuel. That's, and prices are dictating, you know, showing that. And, I think, also you're going to have some reduced amounts of exploration going forward. You have a lot of fracking, whether it's, going to be quelled from a government standpoint, at least in the U.S. and or, some of the capital is just gone, disappeared, with oil prices hitting. You know, that $20 a barrel back in you know, I guess what was it, April-ish?
Almost
now,
a year ago now, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, you know, so very interesting.
I should mention, too, yeah, we should just finish up. We've got the gold market down 470 at 1695 the ounce.
Yeah, below 1700.
Silver down 25 cents. Yep, 2522 the ounce. And then the 10-year, like I mentioned earlier, it's at 1.594. That's up 4 basis points.
Yeah, and we've got digital gold, a.k.a. Bitcoin,
yeah, all right.
down 2%. So, you know, that inflation trade is not looking great today either. So we're just getting started. We've got a lot of information this morning in terms of economics. China had some growth numbers that they're targeting for this year. So we'll get back into it in the second quarter. Stay with us. Looking forward to it. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now Radio Hour with your hosts Barry Kite and Paul Carlson sitting in for Bill Gunderson today. Paul, you with us?
I am, Barry.
All right.
I'm here.
Yeah, looks like kind of still a mixed bag in the markets as you expect. NASDAQ still down roughly almost about 1%. Looks like the Dow's up winter today in the U.S. at least. Currently up 0.32%. That's about a little over 100 points. Sitting just above 31,000. And we've got the S&P at 37.69, basically flat for the day. And NASDAQ, I mean, still 12,605, well below that 1,300, and certainly below that kind of high water mark in the 14,000 ish. So it looks like gold just got back above 1700 as well, and crude oil is sitting well above 65, almost 66 now. But it looks like we're, you know, kind of probably, my guess is probably finish off the week probably pretty flat this afternoon, just before going into the weekend. Certainly. A little bit of uncertainty, and most of it, you know, to me, really has to do with that rotation out of, when you look at, and Bill sent us a good note this morning in terms of kind of some of the drops, right, where you have, NASDAQ is basically down, probably down 10%, close to maybe even correction territory
almost.
Now,
yeah.
We're down 0.9%, but, you know, roughly down, you know, say roughly just say 10%. S&P is only down right around 3, a little more than 3. So that's a, you know, about a 7% difference between, you know, the S&P 500 broad market and the NASDAQ. So, you know, it's very evident that there's a rotation out of your higher PE names, you know, just so happens to be tech driven because of those are the names that had been run up.
And, you know, I've had clients call and say, well, why do you hold all the cash that you're holding? Well, that's actually one of our, you know, as an active, unconstrained manager, that's the way that we can help protect or cushion that volatility.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of the three primary tools.
It's a good question, but that's the answer.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, there's three primary tools, and we're going to kind of hit that, you know, kind of the game plan and recap some of Bill's moves as well. In the third segment, but cash is one of the three main tools that we can use to shape the portfolio and take a little risk off the table as well. It also gives us a little dry powder for opportunities when you do have pullbacks like this. So
it's
one of the ways to mathematically make sure we know what market exposures we have, especially if we're sitting in cash, then, you know, mathematically we know how much exposure we have.
Yeah. Should we go over the,
let's hit
economic reports.
Yeah. So in terms of, kind of had some mixed bag, employment numbers early this week, but, finished off, non-farm payrolls were very strong. If you have the numbers in front of you, or I can hit them as well.
Yeah, we added 379,000 jobs in February. That put the unemployment rate basically unchanged at 6.2%. Did you have more detail you wanted to add to that? Or?
Yeah, consensus, you know, so consensus was 175. So, you know, basically blew the number out, and a lot of that was because of the payroll numbers earlier in the week weren't that great. And, you know, those two, I think me and you have talked about it before as well, those two numbers have diverged a lot more since
COVID.
Yeah, since COVID. So when you look, you know, it's the ADP numbers and the non-farm payroll numbers. You know, a lot of times one's indicative of the other. In certain markets, they get a little dislocation, and it's been pretty significant dislocation at the moment. At some point, those will kind of come back in. But yeah, so that 175.
Yeah, I've never been a big proponent of the ADP number myself, personally.
Yeah,
it's for whatever that's worth.
Yep, and that's it's a survey, you know, so that part gets a little murky sometimes. But you have, and some of those job losses on the ADP, you know, are needed, whether it's a restructuring, whether it's a, you know, a merger, you know, some of those payrolls, you know, payroll numbers are just. They're just given in a normal everyday set of business.
Transitory versus structural, or
exactly. You know. Yep. And so beating the number by 200 is huge. They also revised up 166 from the previous revised number of 49,000. So that's a big jump there. Like you said, unemployment 6.2% versus consensus at 6.3. Where the gains were is kind of to me, and I'm looking what's the signs of growth, right? Because to me, like I said, if a certain amount of inflation's okay as long as you have a certain amount of growth. So, I'm looking over job gains were mostly in leisure and hospitality, which are very which are the most cyclical, right? The ones that have been hit the most during COVID.
Sure,
so excited for to see gains there. Some of the smaller gains were in temporary help, which is positive, right? Because you want more full time gigs, and so the other thing is employment decline. Some of the declines were actually in government jobs, education versus your private sector jobs actually had a much bigger jump. Private sector added 379 jobs. Or actually, sorry, it's 465,000 jobs. So,
379 was the net figure. Right.
Yeah, and so the public jobs, were being reduced. That's due to probably state budgets and federal budgets and everything else, right? So having that jump in private payrolls is actually to me is a positive sign. Looks like I like to look at the U6, which is considers underemployment as well.
More comprehensive,
right? Yeah, the trick with unemployment, the main figure is you actually have to be looking for a job. So if you're if you get frustrated and you're like, I'm not even looking for a job, well then you actually don't count towards
that
unemployment
number.
Well,
you're not in the job market. You're not going to count,
right? But you should still show up, I believe, in the U6 number. So
U6, that's
sitting at 11.1%.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the one number I didn't catch is. And I looked at this a lot in, coming out of 08-09 was the labor participation rate. So,
that's still been lagging. Yeah, I think it's still struggling.
I don't
have the figure in front of me.
And it hit a pretty big low, coming out of 08-09. And then, because it's ticked up over the years, obviously, with more women joining the workforce, from, the mid-70s on. And then it started dipped a good bit and coming out of 08-09, and so the unemployment figures didn't really show the slowness of that recovery as much because of the fact that people were actually dropping out of the labor market, and so that's why I kind of focused on that U6 and that labor participation rate back then. But we're, thankfully, we're still here at Gunderson Capital doing some work for you guys. And in the next segment, we'll kind of dive into, the game plan, what we're doing with portfolios, what we kind of foresee going forward. And Just hopefully help some folks out there and give you some insight into what we're thinking. But we'll be back here for the second half of Best Stocks Now. Welcome back here to the second half of the Best Stocks Now Radio Hour. With your host today, I'm Barry Kite, here with our bond portfolio manager, Paul Carlson, playing the role of relief captain for Bill this morning. Paul, looks like we didn't get to it, but the retail sales came out, I think, after
sales.
Yeah, it came out after Bill's, after the show yesterday, and there was a couple of pieces there from a positive some positive information in terms of I think the, I'm pulling them up now, but I think the from a sales perspective we had you had a good bit of I think it was about around a little over 2% increase in retail sales for February, which was kind of a surprise given. Given a lot of the weather challenges, certainly that were present in February.
Yeah, in Texas particularly, right?
Yes, and when you looked at the numbers and breakdown of regions, right? I think they were, I think their retail sales were down, 30-40% in some areas,
mm-hmm.
but which is
and
to
they
be
account for about 10-11% of overall U.S. sales volume.
Yeah, which is more than I would have assumed. Just kind of going. From going from memory or going from what you would expect, right? But that's pretty interesting there.
Pretty
also,
given all that,
Yeah, and online
4.6 year over year. Yeah,
and I think online sales were up over 50% for the month. So that kind of to me, it's important because that's kind of that last last comp really for in terms of February being. You would expect retail, online sales, right, to tick up, be a harder comp number in March and on from a year ago, given that at the beginning of lockdown and the COVID pandemic kind of taking hold in the U.S. So those were, those are some interesting numbers to look at. Like I said, I think they came out in between after the show for Bill yesterday, and then. Looks like our imports imported a bit more than expected.
Yeah, because that's the oil's component of that, right?
So, yeah. Yep. Trade
deficit grew to $68.2 billion versus $67 billion per month. So,
Yeah, and those, and that's going to be, that's going to be a sign as well of, right, we're, we're ahead, certainly China and us, right, are above, ahead of the game, at least in terms of recovery compared to the rest of the globe. So in terms of, our exports, right, we're exporting to countries that are, a little behind us in the recovery, and of course we're importing. From countries that are a little behind us, but we're obviously a net importer to begin with. The dollar also is going to affects that. All else being equal, if the dollar falls, then our we're going to be in importing more. Even if it's the same amount of goods, they're just going to essentially cost more.
Right.
But that's good bit of economic important news today. Also. In China, they had, they had their annual, congressional, meeting, right? And so they essentially, one of the benefits of China and communism, I guess, in general is planned economies, right? And so,
if they plan correctly.
Yeah. You got to plan correctly. Yeah, the one good news is for them it's easier to implement, right? Good or bad.
Yeah, but if you build a city and nobody comes, well, that's a problem.
Right. Yeah, that's padding the numbers, but so anyway. They had 3,000 lawmakers got together. as they normally do, and essentially they go over plans for GDP future growth, right? What inflation targets going forward? So they, it's a very methodical way of going about, running your economic economic activity. And one thing I noticed is that they're planning a lot more R&D spending. So they're going to, as we've seen with their electric vehicle stocks, right? They're they're going to continue to put money into research and development and trying to become, a technological giant to rival us versus, I guess, just, copying what the rest of the world does or reverse engineering. So, following this part kind of, ties into, the ghost infrastructure bill, right? The one that, we've been expecting for, probably close to 10 years now where we, when we need an infrastructure bill. But, I look at this as almost the equivalent of, of our infrastructure bill. Essentially they're giving us some insights in, where they're going to fuel investment, which, is easier to define how that's going to, say, affect said companies in those particular sectors. So that part, some positive news, and we'll get some more information from that particular meeting and how that's going to affect a number of those Chinese stocks, all across whether it's solar, whether it's EV. There was some information about increasing competition, right, which affects
combine the EV with China. They have 400,000 electric buses. Just so you know, it's 99% of the world's total.
Yeah. I mean, they're far ahead in terms of, and a lot of that has to do with fueling the investment for it, right? They've given
long term planning.
They've given a lot of tax incentives, encouraging that investment. They've also, the way they're structured, they could probably help make sure, some of those names, succeed if they want to, right?
They want people to be able to breathe.
For them, that is, you're 100% correct. That's, they almost have to have it from a necessity standpoint, to tell you the truth. They've got to get something cleared up, from that perspective. But, in terms of, so all those kind of fee, the main point in touching on this economic news is all this kind of feeds into our overall investment thesis and, how Bill and our team are kind of navigating, right, this
the rotation.
We've got the great reopening, so I guess we can't really call this the great rotation, but it's certainly a rotation that we're in the middle of, and it's switching spots. Think of it as musical chairs, right? Everything's good until you get towards that last chair, right? And then and you're going to have some turmoil, and I think that's where we're at. To me, when I look at it, in terms of all the fuel and, tailwinds, that we have for the economy, right? I can certainly, foresee, right, earnings tick up, right? Which, all else being equal improves, price to earnings ratios regardless, right? If the,
saw a great report from one of our holdings, John Deere and Company, DE. Just a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Right. Yep. And that's so that's the initial. So in terms of game plan, right? So what did was Bill? What were we doing? Starting 2-3 weeks ago, right? And number one was stock selection, as you could see, rotating out of some of those tech names and adding more cyclical
cash.
Names. Deer.
Yep. And then adding cyclical names.
Yeah.
Right.
DE being one of them that had a great earnings report when we were on the show a couple of weeks ago, two Fridays ago, and then also when you look at Premier Growth, our Premier Growth portfolio, for instance, right now, we're seeing some of these veil in the portfolio, right? That's
natural resources.
Got into veil on February 22nd. you know, having SQM, you know, added that, you know, back in January. You know, deer added in January 12th. And so you look at, you know, there's a, what's the, there's another name in here too that, Freeport Mac.
FCX. Freeport. Yep. FCX.
That's, we added that on the 17th of February. Yeah, and so
yeah, it's your copper, but it also has a gold component, so that's kind of a nice kind of barbell, if you will.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, via stock selection is, you know, kind of how we're, you know, how you can, you know, changing the names in your portfolio, right, is going to change how, you know, their correlation to the market, correlation to certain aspects of the market. So as we've, you know, kind of take, you know, at the whole portfolio level, right, we've reduced the overall price
the
to earnings ratio.
Yeah.
Right?
And the P's. Yep.
And so that's, you know, so that's the trick. And we'll get into the other two kind of legs on the last quarter of the show. But, you know, we're things are moving fast here. I guess just like the markets, we'll get a recap and kind of take a look and see where we're at for the final segment of the week. Welcome back. Come back. Welcome back here to the fourth and final quarter of Best Stocks Now Hour. I'm Barry Kite here with our bond guru, Paul Carlson.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, looks like you know, going through. Normally we do a stock of the day segment here at the end, and you know, looking through the list today, it's you know, I think
you wanted to make it cash.
I was actually going to make it cash, and we'll hit QID as well, which is an inverse NASDAQ position that we use. And I think we actually just I think Bill just added it to the portfolio sometime this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're gonna go. I don't know if Bill's done cash before as the stock of the day, but we may be breaking ground here today. So we'll, you know, which ties kind of back into getting into, you know, our game plan. You know, basically three immediate tools that we have in terms of gearing these portfolios and kind of you know, de-risking and, you know, increasing risk along the way. Depending on which direction we're going, but, you know, number one,
use the word gear, because, you know, gearing in Europe means leveraging, right? Like margin.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of ironic. But
yeah.
No, the opposite.
Exactly.
switching gears.
Yeah. Switching gears. It's a manual transmission over here, but, I mean, you know, so the second, you know, first is stock selection, second's cash, third is, you know, using inverse ETFs or hedges. Right. And we covered stock selection, in the first, last segment. And that's, you know, basically just moving, rotating from, you know, just what the market's doing, rotating from, you know, high PE stocks currently, rotating over to more cyclicals, miners, more correlated to, you know, economic
basic material,
GDP.
Yeah.
Right. Industrial production, that type of thing. And so, you know, cash is the second. So cash, you know, benefit of cash is mathematically, right? We know what it's going to do, most importantly, unlike, you know, say gold, using gold as a hedge, right? We don't always, you know, gold isn't going to always react the way we think it's going to react, you know, currently.
Or Bitcoin.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, that one acts a little bit too much in each direction. So it's a little overshoot from Bitcoin, at least currently. And so cash, take it, you know, at the beginning of the year, and I'm using Premier Growth as an example, just because it's kind of our you know, kind of flagship growth fund here. But in terms of cash, right, began the year roughly right around 8%. At the end of January, we're, you know, sitting right roughly around 16%. And then now, you know, once the dust settles today, you know, roughly, you know, my guess is probably finish up around, say, 30%, probably in Premier Growth, maybe a little bit higher.
And we'll have those figures in the newsletter that comes out tomorrow, which you can get at GundersonCapital.com. There's a free trial there for you. If you'd like to see those exact figures as they come out tomorrow, just sign up.
Yep, and you can each look at each portfolio. You can see what our cash level is, right? You can also see kind of this week will be a good number of moves. You can see some mainly sells that we did this week and raising some of that cash. So part, that part to me, and it's important because cash, serves two purposes. One, it's going to, reduce our overall market exposure. But number two, when you're, as Bill's talked about us being, certainly NASDAQ at that 14,000 level being, at what looks to be and it's turning out to be a market top, at least currently, mostly the problem there is usually, everyone's fully invested, right? And so when there is a pullback, there's no real dry powder to kind of hop in and take advantage of that drop.
Yeah. So most advisors are passive, right? So they just do the asset allocation based on your age, and they tell you to ride it out, and then they have no powder, available to take advantage of the, correction.
Yeah, because essentially always fully invested, and the little bit amount of cash they leave is probably to pay their fees, right? And so from our perspective, right, this having this cash also gives us the ability, some dry powder, to hop in when we think things are things are a bit overdone, right? Not only does it help you in terms of your amount of drawdown, but it also helps. In order to be, being able to put that capital back to work when there's some deals out there, right? I think
exactly.
I certainly think in the semiconductor sector, it doesn't feel like it right now, but I think going forward at some point, right, it's going to be that could be one of the first plays you get back into, just because that supply and demand mismatch that we've discussed for so long still is there. It's just the prices of the underlying semiconductor firm has been down. So we've, certainly, raised some additional cash this week, in light of some of the market pullback, certainly within our more aggressive portfolios, ultra growth, emerging growth, which have been great, from a return perspective. You got to go ahead and take some of those gains off the table. And got a good bit of cash there. Which,
as Bill says, you don't want your offense on the field the whole time. Sometimes you have to put the defense out there a little bit. So
right, yeah,
that's what he's been doing.
Yeah, and in these types of markets, certainly in those high beta stocks, you're going to give up a little bit of that gain before you can get out. It's just otherwise you wouldn't have any signal to actually get out, right? Those stocks move 5% either way, on a daily basis. For us from a trigger standpoint, right, you're going to, once they get, 10, 15, whether we're putting a line in the sand or what have you, it's time to go ahead and take some of those gains.
That's where a professional, like Bill and the rest of us, you and I, understand the difference between the noise, right, the daily volatility, and an actual trend change, right?
Right, exactly, and it's the sell discipline. Frankly, we're a lot of individual investors, right, are making mistakes because everyone gets excited about adding or buying a stock and adding it to the portfolio, right? No one's really throwing a party for parting ways with a stock, right? So we've got we'll have a lot of folks that come on board who have followed us for a while and they'll own a lot of stocks that we've liked over the years. The fact is they just haven't sold them.
They never bothered to sell them.
Right. Right. Yeah.
They're not doing so well anymore. And we sold them years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of it. And that's part of investor psychology, working with a professional actually is what helps take some of that emotion out of it a lot of times. But, the last piece before we wrap up today is going to be, the inverse ETFs, right? So we've just started, adding back some of those to the portfolio, mainly to hedge some of that market risk. We use, SH as our inverse to S&P, QQQ. We've also used some inverse biotech to kind of get rid of some of the high PE stocks in the market. But,
it just flew by, didn't it, Barry?
Yeah, it did. It's exciting, exciting stuff here, and you're always wanting to stay flexible, unconstrained, and I think in this market, I think it makes sense. So we appreciate your time.
Talk to Barry or myself, it's 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST.
Have a great week, guys.
Buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson, or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.